any innovative ideas that involve, you know, large numbers of collaborative devices interacting with each other want to be openly explored. And that's why this discussion of net neutrality is so important, because we want the exploration to happen. We want people to be free to try out applications that reside in the Web 2.0 space without being faced with getting permission to try things out from the broadband carriers.
This is Catherine Girardeau, PodTech News. It's Wednesday, November 8th. I'm in San Francisco at the Elegant Palace Hotel for the Web 2.0 conference. This morning I talked with Vint Cerf. Vint Cerf is VP and Chief Internet Evangelist for Google. He's also known as one of the fathers of the Internet. He co-designed the TCP/IP protocols and the architecture of the net. In addition to being one of the designers of the Internet's architecture, he also founded some important professional organizations that have further shaped the Internet. At the Web 2.0 conference, Vint Cerf is debating Robert Pepper, formerly of the FCC, now with Cisco Systems, about the contentious issue of network neutrality. I asked Vint Cerf why network neutrality was important at this point in the development of the Internet.
Well, in some respects, network neutrality has been important to the Internet ever since its inception. The openness of the network and the opportunity for virtually anyone to try out a new application without having to get special permission or pay specially an ISP in order to try that out has been fundamental to the innovation that has, in fact, grown the Internet over the last 15 years that it's been a commercial enterprise. That openness has been threatened by the FCC's action last August to transfer Internet service from a communications regime to an information regime, is moving it from Title II to Title I. The side effect of that has been to allow the broadband carriers in particular a kind of license to charge whatever they want to and to exercise whatever constraints and limitations they wish on what consumers are allowed to do or what producers are allowed to do on the network. The loss of that neutrality, that non-discriminatory element, the effective loss of common carriage rules, really threatens Internet innovation, and it also threatens consumer choice.
Now, what are the global forces at work here? I know that this debate over network neutrality or Internet regulation is pretty heated in the United States. What are the forces at work in the rest of the world around regulation of the Internet?
Well, in fact, this same debate has been echoed in other parts of the world. I was aware of that in the UK, for example, when Ofcom, the equivalent of FCC, undertook to assure that the network was open. They required BT to maintain an open wholesale capability or service that was equally available to anyone who could pay for it. Similarly, we see the same kinds of results in the Netherlands, where both cable and telephone industries must be open, must not discriminate against users. And similarly, in New Zealand, legislation was passed that has the same effect. So we're seeing a recognition that this open access and this non-discriminatory access is critical in many countries that recognize the problem.
So you're very much part of the beginnings of the Internet, the founding of the Internet, the assurance that the Internet is an open network. So what advice would you give the parties squabbling over regulation or not at this point?
Well, the concern that I have, along with my colleagues, is that there isn't sufficient competition for broadband service in the U.S. There was plenty of competition for dial-up. There were thousands of dial-up service providers, and it was easy to switch. You just changed the telephone number you called, and you went to a different modem bank. But in the broadband world, it's much harder to switch. You have a choice at most of two in the United States, DSL and cable. About 60% of the population does get to make that choice. About 30% gets only one choice, either cable or DSL, but not both. And 10% get no choice at all. Switching is hard if you don't have any other choices. The alternative technologies have not taken off. Things like broadband over power line or wireless are simply have almost no visibility in the commercial spectrum. Maybe 0.5% of all broadband services offered by other than DSL and cable. So what is critical here is to recognize the potential for abuse, the potential for anti-competitive behavior, and to put roadblocks in the way of that potential in order to make sure it doesn't happen. If there were enough competition, you and I wouldn't be talking about net neutrality. I wouldn't be worried about it. But there isn't enough competition, and there isn't any evidence right now that there will be enough competition. And so to protect the Internet's innovative character and to protect consumers who want to have the open choice to go anywhere on the Internet that they expect to go, that's what they paid for when they bought broadband service, we need to have these kinds of protections. I will point out that some people distort our view and argue, well, they won't let us charge more for higher speeds. That's not true. I mean, if the consumer wants broader band service, paying more is perfectly reasonable. What we're concerned about is that the carrier, the operator of the underlying physical facility, is abusing, or potentially could abuse, that access to control the applications that run on it, or control which service providers, which applications the users can get to, by differentially charging those service providers to get access to the users.
What argument do you provide to people who say, well, there's no need to regulate it, there's no problem right now, this is premature regulation?
Two responses to this. I won't quote the frequently mentioned Madison case. And, you know, it's an example, but I wouldn't call it totally compelling. We're actually seeing some of these problems showing up in Korea recently. There's quite a flap over the inhibition of competitive video services by a carrier who had its own competitive video and in fact blocked or otherwise interfered with competitors. That's one example. I think the other reason that I'm concerned about it is that even if there isn't any current problem, the potential is extremely high for anti-competitive behavior. Example, one of the competitive alternatives is municipal networks. And we've seen the local exchange carriers in the United States actively trying to prohibit the construction of municipal networks by seeking legislation at the state level. And that seems to me a prima facie example of anti-competitive behavior. In that case, it's my view and the view of my colleagues that we need legislative protections against that.
Now, we're here at the Web 2.0 conference where people are learning about and talking about the latest wave of web development. What do you think is the next wave of development of the Internet, say, over the next 5 to 10 years?
Oh, that's a really hard question to answer. I can tell you what some of the elements are, the standards that will allow sort of free interaction among parties is important. The Web 2.0, although I think it's a rather marketing kind of term, does have the characteristic that if you standardize enough of the document exchanges that can occur and the protocols that are used, that we could get inter-corporate interaction happening. Business processes could be interacting directly with each other, accounts payable, accounts receivable, order entry, and so on. We could speed up the whole process of business by having these standards in place. Second, and probably very important, is that any innovative ideas that involve large numbers of collaborative devices interacting with each other want to be openly explored. And that's why this discussion of net neutrality is so important, because we want the exploration to happen. We want people to be free to try out applications that reside in the Web 2.0 space without being faced with getting permission to try things out from the broadband carriers.
Thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed the chance to chat.
Vint Cerf is a vice president and chief internet evangelist for Google. Before that, he was with MCI. He's perhaps best known for being one of the architects or fathers of the internet. At San Francisco's Palace Hotel at the Web 2.0 conference, I'm Catherine Giraudot, Podtech News.